Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad, uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Voice Rising. With me in the studio today is Zoe Beck. Zoe is an award-winning, best-selling author, publisher, translator, and dubbing director. She's won multiple awards for her books and translations. And together with Jan Karsten, Zoe founded the literary publishing house Couture Books in 2013, which also continues to sweep up awards. Today, we're going to dive into questions that I've been wanting to ask her for years, questions all about the voice. So welcome, Zoe, to the show.
Hi, Kara. So lovely to be here.
Yes, lovely, right? So I know that you're sometimes a little bit shy to say, but you are one of the most important German crime fiction authors in the moment on the market. I'm just going to read these off because a lot of the people in our audience, they might not know your work yet, because I know that I'm sure going to have it translated into English very soon, but you've won the Friedrich Glause Prize, the Radio Bremen Crime Fiction Prize, the German Crime Fiction Prize. And yet what fascinates me is not only do you write book after book after book after book after book after book, you are involved in so many other different projects. You are a clear advocate for community. You support a lot of people and empower people to bring out their own stories. You also you do work in studios and to translate scripts and to bring new scripts out. And you love Berlin Gardens and you love your cats. I really don't know how you do it, Zoe. So I'm going to ask you this clear question in the beginning: what drives you?
Oh, I really don't know what drives me. I think it's got all to do with telling stories. I write stories, I translate stories, and I want stories to be out there for other people to enjoy and to experience. And maybe that was one of the reasons why we had this idea, Jan and I, for our little publishing house. And to be honest, Jan does most of the work for Couture Books. And I do some translations and stuff, of course. But what we do at Couture Books is we want to publish international voices to show how diverse the literary scene in this whole world is, and to make all these stories available in Germany from so many other countries. And of course, I only translate from English to German, so we have other people working for us on several projects so that we can choose stories from, that were written in Spanish originally, or Swedish, or Finnish, or so many other languages. But this is, as I said, it's about storytelling. It's about learning more about this world and about other people, and to get to know each other better. better in a global sense to get to know other cultures and other countries.
To basically create good vibes and world peace, or to have people working more together.
Yeah.
As a storytelling activist, do you consciously look to write and publish books and stories that are about social change, or is it any kind of story that's going to bring us closer to, I mean, what do you look for when you're looking for these books? I mean, are there certain values or certain ethics that you are drawn towards?
Yeah, I think we have lots of feminist voices, mm-hmm. and some queer writers even, mm-hmm. and how to describe it? It's writers who often know more than just, or who grew up in more than just one country, and who know several cultures, and they talk about the differences of these cultures and the difficulties of understanding each other. For example, we have some writers from Nigeria, mm-hmm. and the US who grew up in Nigeria and then went to school in the US and then went back to Nigeria and so on, and they talk about all these differences and the things that these cultures have in common, but which difficulties they have in life, and what, for example, what does it mean to not come from one country and maybe not have one homeland, for example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what does it mean to feel at home? But often it's about it's not just about cultural differences, but also about politics, of course, and just human lives, human beings, just stories, really.
Human life. Yeah. James Baldwin, who I'm sure you know, he said.
Yeah.
You write in order to change the world, knowing perfectly well that you probably can't, but also knowing that literature is indispensable to the world. Right?
Absolutely.
The world changes according to how people see it. And I mean, I think that's what's so fascinating in this time is that we have, I don't know if there's ever been a time, I mean, I wanted to ask you this anyway, I don't think there's ever been a time where so many people could publish and bring out their stories.
Yeah.
It seems like we're in a creative renaissance as far as there is the ability, wherever you are in this world that's connected to the internet, to start telling your story.
Yes, thanks to digital publishing.
I think
it's not so big in every country on this planet, mm-hmm. but digital publishing has made things, ebook publishing has made things so much easier. I mean, we started as an ebook publisher, and then after 2 or 3 years, we added print editions to our program, not the other way around. We did not start mm-hmm. with print editions, mm-hmm. which would have been the traditional way, but for us it was much easier to start as an ebook publisher. And this is what you can do nowadays, and you can reach out to people all over this planet. And what I found so amazing during this pandemic now, so many things were possible still. I mean, you could not go out and go on readings. You could not meet
right.
people. But so many new networks started oh my God, what's the word for it? So many people founded new networks. For example, in on the African continent, the South African writer Suki Sfowena, she started a literature festival, an online mm-hmm. literature festival mm-hmm. called Afro Lit Sans Frontières, Without Borders, Sans Frontières mm-hmm. in French. And mm-hmm. So she connected with writers from all over her continent and got to know all these other amazing writers, and so they connected with each other, and they got into conversations, and they all had new ideas what to do maybe together now that they couldn't go out and do what they usually did. And so I think they all had new ideas suddenly. And that was so amazing to see this.
Well, it's almost like there's a global mind that can come together, right? I mean,
yeah.
If we all share from all these different parts of the world, then each of us carries a little piece of maybe inspiration or an idea of how it could be done. And then if somebody told me once that it just blew my mind, and that's why it's so important to understand that this literature from wherever we're coming from is so important, because they were saying that in the country where they come from, the future is behind them because they've already experienced it, and what they don't know is the past, and that's in front. And in my growing up, the future was always ahead of me and the past was behind. Right?
Yeah.
And so when we are exposed to different literature or different stories, we learn to see in different ways, which can only be enriching.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
exactly.
Less.
Yeah. No? We can only learn from each other.
We can only learn from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And in this whole big digital world, and on one hand, we have a lot of freedom and a lot of independence and a lot of creativity. And on the other hand, and I think you talk about this in your new book, but, you know, when we used to tell stories, like really big stories, like there was a man and he was so tall that he had polka dotted pants on, or I don't know. We knew that it was a story, and we knew that it was a fib or it was a tall tale. And now through social media and digital publishing, in one way it's good if it's labeled as a book. But there are a lot of people sharing stories where you don't even know if it's true or not true or fake or not fake. And we're being flooded with so many stories that a lot of people don't even know what is a story or what is real. What is your take on responsibility that we have as a writer or as a publisher to make sure that we say, oh, this is a fiction, or this is a novel, or this is, you know, I mean, what is your take on, because we want freedom, right? We want to be able to feel free as writers, to be able to live our voices. And at the same time, it seems like there must be a responsibility somewhere connected to the freedom that we're longing for.
You mean the difference between fact and fiction? I mean, usually writers say very clearly what they made up and what is their opinion and what they think is an important fact to be discussed. And this is so it's so important to be absolutely clear about these things and to make people understand that source checking has become so much more important, especially during the past few years.
Maybe that's what I was getting at, because I think that a lot of people are publishing in a publishing house, so you know it's a book. But there are so many stories that are starting to circulate because everybody's able to write.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of, we all are so hungry. We're so hungry for good story. And unfortunately, some of the stories are not true. And then it creates a very complicated political landscape.
I think this is where journalism comes in. You need... In every country, you need reliable, very reliable sources. You need very good journalists and people who know how to check facts and how to check their sources and to go there and talk to people and make sure this is a fact and this is just fiction, or this is a story that was told but we cannot confirm that it's really true. And so journalism has probably become even more important, even though many people, even world leaders, don't want journalists to do their really responsible jobs.
Yeah. When you work with your writers in the publishing house, Kulturbooks, and they are expressing these powerful stories. Are you publishing books that are sometimes in their countries where they might be persecuted, or they might be, let's say, because you talked about feminist rights or feminism or transgender, or, you know, giving people a place to voice important stories.
Yeah.
Are they safe where they are, or is it a risk for them sometimes to bring their story out and publish?
Yeah, well, it can be a risk. We were once looking at a book from a Hong Kong writer, mm-hmm. and his agent had sent us the manuscript, and we were thinking, okay, this is a very interesting piece, and we weren't sure whether we were the right publishing house for it. But while we were still discussing it, mm-hmm. the writer had to say, okay, I'm not safe any longer. I have to leave the country, and please just forget about the manuscript. It must not be printed anywhere anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. So these things can happen. But usually these writers already live in safe countries. They already had to leave mm-hmm. if it mm-hmm. was dangerous for them. They already had left their home countries, and now they are in safe spaces. But these things can happen, and I know from other publishers that they publish writers that have problems in their countries. But it can happen all the time.
And this again is the amazing responsibility we have. How the story can be that powerful, and the voice, if you really voice your truth, you have to be very brave. Zoe, we're going to take a small station break, mm-hmm. and then we're going to be back with more about the voice.
Okay.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. OM Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
With happy clients all over the world, Kara Johnstad knows that your voice is the missing link to more authenticity, abundance, creativity, and health. An internationally acclaimed voice expert, Kara's breakthrough methods have helped thousands of people successfully heal their voice wounds and extinguish the story of self-doubt and shyness forever. Join in group trainings, attend online sessions, schedule one-on-one time, and invite Kara to work with your organization and community. Get started today. Go to www.karajohnstad.com and receive a special guided meditation designed to fine-tune your inner voice and welcome you on the voice journey.
This is Kathy Beal, host of Celestial Compass, featuring astrology you can use. Celestial Compass points you to what's going on in the sky and what you can do with it down here on Earth. We also explore fun, effective, and cosmic tools for navigating this adventure we call life. Join me the first and third Monday of the month at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for Celestial Compass. It's enlightening, entertaining, and empowering.
COVID-19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
If you're feeling increasingly lonely right now, you're not alone. It's totally normal. Even though we may not be able to get together in person, connecting virtually with friends and family still gives you a chance to interact with people and may help raise your spirits. Join a virtual book club, set up group text chats, or online video coffee breaks with coworkers.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
Hi, welcome back to Voice Rising. I'm your host, Kara Johnstad, and with me in studio is the best-selling author and publisher, Ms. Zoe Beck. Zoe, we're talking all about books and also publishing and the power of story. And I want to backtrack a little bit into your childhood, because I am a lover of great music, and I know you are too. And I believe I read somewhere that at the young age of 3, you discovered piano.
I did, yes.
Yeah, at 3, right?
Yeah.
And I'm imagining you sitting on the piano bench with your feet dangling in the air,
yeah,
not even being able to reach the pedals. Do you remember that moment, or do you remember the beginning of falling in love with that instrument?
I actually don't remember the first moment when I sat in front of it, but I believe to remember the moment this piano was brought to our house. My grandmother, she bought it, and she told us, me and my older sister, she told us that it came from, it was built in South Africa, and it was for us to practice, actually for my older sister, of course. And my sister, she was 10 years old, and we were sitting there with big round eyes and just watching this piano being delivered to our house. This is what I seem to remember, but maybe it was just, maybe my sister just told me, and this is what I remember today. But what I know is that when my sister started playing and started practicing every day at home, I just loved it so much, and I wanted to do exactly the same. I mean, you always want to do what your siblings do, and you want to be like them. And of course, I wanted to be like my sister. And so I just, I think I just imitated what she did.
Yeah.
Because I liked it so much. And so my parents decided to take me with her to the to her piano lessons, mm-hmm. and so her teacher said that I seem to have a certain talent for music and for playing the piano, and this is how I started taking lessons when I was really, really, really young, and I just loved music and I loved playing the piano. And so that's what I did for nearly 20 years.
Yeah. So you weren't in South Africa. You were in Germany. Were you in Germany or in England?
At that time, I was in Germany, and this piano, I think the company that produced this special piano was from South Africa, and this is all I remember. That when I was a kid, I thought, why bring a piano this long way from South Africa to Germany? I thought it was so amazing, and this is why I kept this in mind, and this is why I still remember it.
That it is
a South
amazing.
African piano.
Yeah. I mean, it is amazing how these instruments are built, and then they really spend time in people's homes all over the world, and the instrument always travels normally. At least my instrument has also been from Chicago, Berlin, Munich, all over the world. So you started this adventure of piano, and was it really, was it rigorous training, or was it easygoing, playful?
Oh, I had this Russian teacher.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
This is all I ever have to say. I have this Russian teacher, and everybody goes like, "Oh my goodness! Oh my goodness!" Yeah. But I liked him a lot, and he liked me a lot. And he wasn't exactly easygoing, but the teacher before that was a very, very kind, very friendly lady, and she thought that I was some kind of wunderkind.
Yeah,
some kind of child prodigy.
Like a prodigy.
Mm. Yeah. And so when she got pregnant and had to stop giving lessons, she recommended this other teacher at this music school. and said, you have to train for concerts, and you have to go out on stage, and you have to do all these. I don't know if you have anything like this in the United States, like Jugendmusiziert.
Yeah, we have a lot of these competitions. I mean, in schools we have solo ensemble, but we have, I think, in the, especially in the classical world, there's a lot of competition.
And these competitions for very, very, very young people, when I look back, I think they were really, really brutal. They weren't just fun. They just, looking back, I believe that they weren't meant to take away all the fun, but that's exactly what they did. You had to be so you had to be so exact. You had to be you had to look, especially as a girl, you had to look a certain way. And it was really nerve-wracking. And maybe this is what took away all the fun from playing the piano, which I used to love. And over the years, I just became more and more nervous and less secure. And I believe I would have needed a teacher just like you to make me more comfortable going out on stage. But to be honest, my teacher, he was a fantastic piano player. He was really, really great, and I loved him a lot, really. He was a fantastic person. I'm so sorry that he died. I actually stopped playing the moment that I heard that he had passed away. I really admired him, but one of his problems, or the biggest problem, was that he could not explain to me how to feel safe on stage. And I think this I always lacked. At that time, I always lacked a certain safety, a feeling of safety on stage. I always felt extremely threatened on stage. I felt so exposed and so vulnerable.
And which we are, yes.
Yes, yeah. And he didn't know how to explain it to me, that I didn't have to feel like this. He maybe he had similar problems, I don't know. But he was a very nervous person, like me. And I mean, he died in his 40s, so he must have been quite young.
Oh my goodness!
And he was a chain smoker, and he seemed to live on coffee. I never saw
coffee,
him
cigarettes,
drink
and music.
Anything but coffee, or I probably never even saw him eat anything. So it was all coffee and cigarettes, and whenever I had to play be on stage, and there was a concert or a competition, he was probably as nervous as I was. So he was not the right person to teach me how to feel calm and safe and okay on stage. He just he taught me how to play wonderfully. And he knew that I had a talent, and that I was a very good piano player, but just this stage fright thing, he just couldn't do anything about it. And I believe I tried everything. I tried meditation, but probably had the wrong teachers. I tried so many things, but never found the right person to help me with this problem. And this is why I had to stop, unfortunately.
Yeah, it'll come again. I'll give you some tricks. But, if you look back at that time, I mean, you spent a lot of time, I think, up until your early 20s, really obviously practicing a lot and being honed into that perfection. Is it, you know, is it also that practicing that drives you as a writer? Because you are a very... I mean, you say you're not, but I know you are, to be able to do the amount of work that you do. You're a very disciplined person. You do make your deadlines, even though they might be under duress. And you do, like I said, I mean, you're not only a writer. I mean, other people would, you know, in their life, they would write a book. You've written many, many books. You've written crime. You've written romance, which you probably want to forget about. You've written...
I needed the money.
Nonfiction, you've written articles, right? You've written articles, and for everybody out there, I mean, you do readings. You also do readings for other well-known authors. You are in dubbing studios. You do a lot of work. Is it that kind of discipline that you were trained as a kid that carries on over now into your work life?
I think so. I think it's the discipline you need if you want to be a proper musician. You need to practice more than the other kids who just play for fun, and or who just play in order to play a happy birthday tune for their grandparents, which is nice. And I sometimes wish it would have been like this with me, but I think my first concert was my first time on stage was when I was five, and my first real competition was when I was 6 years old. And so yes, it was many hours of training every day, and so I think I'm probably used to putting lots of effort and lots of work into something, and to be really exact with things, and to, yeah, to put a lot of time into, let's call them projects.
Time into, and talk to us about perfection. I'm assuming now you're older and wiser, so you might find a balance, but a lot of times, what you were saying too at the piano, it's like the perfection is so important, but it can also, you know, make us a nervous wreck and keep us from being in flow and having fun.
Exactly.
So how do you find, if we draw the parallels between music and now your writing, you have a clear voice. You have a clear voice as a writer. You've gotten also... the critics have said, you know, you can recognize your writing style. So obviously you've honed your own style. So you have a certain idea of pattern and rhythm and how you want stories to develop. Is it easier for you when you write to find a playful balance, or are you also, do you also struggle with that perfectionist that you were trained to be?
Trying not to be a perfectionist, or trying not to be perfect, sometimes it's harder than trying to reach perfection. And this is so weird, but this is how I grew up, and this is probably how I am. But now I really try to relax. I try to. I keep telling myself that I don't need to go for the 150%, and that maybe 95% are still enough. And it's really hard. I have to keep telling myself that this is. Even when I was younger, and when this stage fright panic attacks happened to me, I thought maybe it's because the piano is not my instrument. On the other hand, I had a real talent, and so I found this very confusing. And it took me years to find out that it didn't have to do anything to do with the instrument, but with being on stage and how to be on stage and how the audience was, that the audience expected perfection and expected me to maybe imitate something else. And going out with my own stuff, with my own writing, and with my own voice. And I mean, we're talking about storytelling and voices and giving a voice to something here. So maybe it wasn't just about piano and the piano music. It had more to do with me trying to find something that had that was closer to me and closer to my stories. And,
closer to your stories, closer to
and
your
a different,
heart.
And
right?
a different audience. And a different audience. This audience yeah. just expected something completely different from me. This audience wanted a different person to be up there on stage and do this. Which has to do with this classical music kind of audience. It's a very difficult topic, but I think I just had to find something else for me that was closer to me, closer to my heart, and closer to better for my voice.
Right. Yeah. Right. I can imagine that when you do readings, your audience is absolutely excited to know where you're going to take them.
Yeah.
And in the classical world, of course, everybody knows the Bach
yeah.
Prelude in
yeah.
C, or they know the Chopin Etude. And so you're always being compared. You're
yes.
being compared with the age. And as a storyteller and as an author,
yeah.
You're inventing new. I mean, a lot of your stories even take places in... Maybe you did this on purpose, but in a time it's not even in the now or in the past, yeah. nobody can judge you because you create your stories in the future.
The past few stories were actually the setting is completely in the future, and I think it has to do with me wanting to create my own universe. So
yeah.
that there is, yeah, I just wanted to do something completely new and something that belongs only to me. And to
Which
playing,
is gorgeous.
Playing,
right?
dead, playing music from dead composers that probably wasn't, it was too far away from me. I don't know.
yeah, or just this idea that you're creating something that cannot be... again, in this competition world, it can't really be judged. It is judged because you've obviously won many prizes in its own way, but you're creating unique stories and your voice is creating those stories. So we're going to take a very, very short station break, and then we're going to come back and talk more about all those good things.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Life is a flow, and enlightenment is simply harmonizing with the way life really is. Then you find that life is effortless, benevolent, and free of all suffering. Hey everyone, this is GP Walsh, and I want to invite you to my brand new radio show that's launching right here on OM Times Radio called The Flow of Enlightenment. I've been a spiritual teacher for decades, and my greatest pleasure is being able to share with you these deep and highly practical spiritual ideas. So join me in The Flow every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern and let yourself be transformed.
The United States has the highest rate of incarceration in the world. At the Equal Justice Initiative, we believe mass incarceration has to end. There is this presumption of dangerousness and guilt that gets assigned to Black and brown people. We have to confront our history of racial injustice and commit to a new era of truth. There's something better waiting for us, something that feels more like freedom. Truth can inspire change. Please learn more at EJI.org.
Welcome back to Voice Rising. I am your host, Kara Johnstad, and with me in studio is the best-selling author and publisher, Zoe Beck. And Zoe, we left off a little bit with your love for story, your love for creating stories, and also how you finagled your way very creatively out of that stage fear moment by literally creating your own universe in your newest books. I have here a quote from your book, "Germany in the near future, the coasts are flooded. Large parts of the country are depopulated and nature is reclaiming deserted communities. Berlin is nothing but a backdrop for tourists. The government has moved to Frankfurt, which has merged with the entire Rhine main area to become one single megacity. In those places where infrastructure exists, it works flawlessly. Virtually all life is controlled by algorithms. Everyone is fine as long as, dunk, 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 they don't ask questions, which I thought was very fascinating also to do with the voice, because the voice is all about listening also and asking questions. Yeah. That is a very powerful statement. That is, if for the people out there, and maybe you share with us at some point if the book it will be released and published in the English language, but that is the statement that is out there. If they don't ask questions, they are safe. So yeah. why is that statement so important to you? Why was that? Why is this universe important for you to share with us this time?
Yes, I wanted to show what the future might look like if we didn't care about the difference between fact and fake news any longer. And so I created a universe, or I created a time in a country where people were so focused on their own lives and their own well-being and happiness and health and whatever, that they just simply didn't care about what was going on in the world anymore. Mm. And so the government had, of course, had the chance to feed them with fake stories just to make them feel okay, just to make them feel good. And this, of course, can be if you lose interest in the world around you, if you lose interest in the facts and in proper stories, only because you think they don't have anything to do with your own life, or because you think, no, I just don't want to hear bad news, I just want to hear good news because I want to feel good, then you just lose your connection to the world. And you lose your connection to life. And this is very dangerous. You need to be connected. You need to know the truth. You need to struggle and to be alert. This is maybe not 24/7. Everybody needs to relax, of course, but just shutting down is not the answer. And this is basically what I had in mind when I started writing this book.
I mean, I find this, it's, you know, people ask me this question too, and I think it's a hard question to ask, because before, I mean, long ago, we had, of course, no media channels, and then we had the whole radio channels. We had one or two television channels. Then we had many, many hundreds of television channels. Mm. Now, of course, with social media, we have zillions of channels. And a long time ago, we also had gatekeepers and program directors, and they also did not always show the whole picture, right? So we also didn't see, at least in America, we had many shows where they didn't show patchwork families or they didn't show multiracial couples, or they didn't show homosexuality or whatever it might be, right?
Yeah.
And we had the news that was often showing only disaster and not the positive. So, and I mean, at the same time, we get back to this question with our voices that we can not only, you know, change in within our community, but we have this amazing reach nowadays with our stories and what we post and what we read to be affected and to affect people. What is your thought? And it's a really hard question, because people ask me this question all the time. They say, are you for censorship? And I say, of course I'm not for censorship, but I do think, I mean, and this is a question, if we allow any kind of fake news or fake stories or any kind of expression, let's say music with horrific lyrics, which is degrading towards women, etc., with in the name of freedom of speech, it can be very harmful to our world.
Yeah, I mean, hateful voices are very harmful. If you keep hearing hate speech all the time, it affects your brain, of course. You can't just... yes, how to do it without official censorship, yeah. I think as a person with many followers on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, we all have a certain responsibility, even if we don't have many followers. We always, everywhere in life, we have a certain responsibility to discuss things and to acknowledge the complexity of this world, and that there is not always a clear right and wrong when it comes to certain topics, when it comes to politics.
So more of the civic conversations to really go back to understanding that democracy can only happen if we really ask those questions.
If we ask lots of questions, and if we try to go for the full picture as far as we can get, of course. But we need a very, very, very clear. We have to draw a very clear line to say, okay, this is not an opinion. This is simple hate speech. So this must not be here in my room. This must not be here on my Facebook page, so I can delete it. I have to delete this comment because I don't want other people to see it. Not because I don't like this opinion, but because it's simple hate speech, for example. So I think... this is what we all can do to
I agree.
To differentiate between this is an opinion, and I may not like it, but we have freedom of speech in our countries. But here is somebody who just wants to hurt other people and who is just full of hate and full of anger. And of course, we need to listen to people who are full of anger, and we have to try and see if we can still reach out to them. But there has to be the right time and the right place for this. And often social media is not the right place.
I always say it's a little bit like weeding the garden.
Yeah.
You just have to be very clear that if you don't weed the garden, you might, you might not have your beautiful flowers because they were eaten by some strange worm. Zoe, I know this has to do also with writing, and I know you also do a lot with film. You also do, you are doing scripts and dubbing studios, etc. And the studies of people's brains while they're watching movies, they show that the brain does not look like the spectator, but it looks more like a participant in the action. And everybody knows this. When we're in a good book, we are inside that book. I mean, we are in that main character. We are in that story. And that is why our hearts race so much with the hero, or why we identify with Lassie or Old Yeller or whatever. So stories are that powerful because they hook and hold human attention. At a brain level, it literally changes us. A good story will change us. And for me, it's like incredible that we are that connected to each other, that an author in Nigeria or in Berlin or in New York or Mumbai can write a story, and the human element is so strong that we are, that's true empathy, right?
Yeah.
That is true empathy. So what do you think of when you write your stories and you include things like, I want to create a world where we become more attentive, that if we don't ask questions, that we might be more controlled by governments, or if we don't include all people of all colors, we might live a very boring life, right? So what do you think about when you write?
What do I think about when I write? This is a very hard question.
This is a very hard question.
Okay. I think about the characters, I probably just think about the characters and what they want and what they need and where they want to go and what their goal is during. I don't know what I think about when I write.
If we go back to the question before, do we have a certain responsibility as storytellers if we know that people do empathize with our characters, that we create characters that are maybe not full of hate speech, that characters that are in somehow? I always say this as a musician, and I know we're kind of running at the end of the hour, but. As a musician, you know this because you are a musician and I know you love music, but things resolve. There is somewhere in that whole climax and in that whole tension, there is somewhere harmony and beauty to be found. It is not only a screwed up, horrific, hateful place. Is that essential as a storytelling activist? That we find a line inside every piece of work that is transformational or that brings something better out of the muck?
When I start thinking of my characters and of the stories, the storyline, of course, I don't want 100% good or 100% bad characters, because human beings are not like this, and why should characters in books be like this? I think this is important, that you could maybe like the antagonist or hate the protagonist. This at times, not all the time, but the ambivalence, I think, is very important. And what's also important is the use of language. Because this is what affects us so much. So when I describe things, I'm trying to be really, really aware of how I do it. As in, when my characters have to go to a hospital, then I don't want the doctors to be all male and the nurses to be all female, for example. I just want the word that I show, I want this word to be not a better place, that would be wrong, but a more diverse place. So and sometimes you do things unconsciously, and so when I reread what I wrote, I try to see did I do something that is so like a cliche, and maybe I should change it. Maybe I should put different names to the characters so that not everybody sounds so truly German, for example.
Right. So that not
everybody is so white. And I think you can do a lot by making smaller changes during storytelling. It's not just about the big plot line, but it's about all these little details that you have to ask yourself, what kind of world do I want to show? And what do I want to tell people without telling them in such an obvious way, as in, look, this world needs to be more diverse. Now, you don't say that, but you just show it by making it, by creating a more diverse
and by
universe.
Also creating a strong protagonist who... Right, if they identify with your characters, or if they're very drawn, if you're a very good writer and they're in your story, they're inside your story, then that world of diversity is also their world.
Yeah,
and slowly you can shape their belief systems in many ways.
That's how
it is. As a strong voice in our world, Zoe Beck, and I know you're someone who also you really speak out for. Voices that are persecuted and suppressed writers. You're a defender of the freedom of speech. You also are a co-founder of the Feminist Writers Network, Herland. You're co-initiator of the Action Alliance, Verlag gegen Rechts. You do so much.
It publishes against racism,
yes, as a strong voice in this world. which direction would you like us to move in collectively? You have like 30 seconds, so don't worry.
This is not fair. So let's all be, yeah. Everything would be good. No, what can I say in 30 seconds? It's probably only 10 seconds? No. I don't know.
5, 4, 3. Okay, I'm sorry. That wasn't a fair question. I want to thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for the invitation. For everybody, thanks for having me.
For everybody out there, Zoe Beck. And what's your homepage again? Where can they connect with
you? ZoeBeck.net.
ZoeBeck.net, exactly. And I am sure your books are everywhere in German. And are they going to be in the English language at some point? I mean, I think you have short stories.
I hope so. Some short stories are, but otherwise in other countries, but hopefully soon in English. Yeah. Fingers crossed.
Oh, maybe in French and Spanish and
yes,
everything.
Maybe.
Look for Zoe Beck out there. And thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.